This is VOA News. Reporting by remote, I'm Joe Ramsey. Pope Francis makes an Easter plea for peace in Ukraine and in other wars around the world. AP correspondent Julie Walker reports.
After celebrating Easter Sunday Mass for tens of thousands of faithful in St. Peter's Square for the first time since the pandemic, Pope Francis delivered his traditional geopolitical speech in which he cited the risk of nuclear warfare. For the Pope, the war in Ukraine has weighed on his heart. Speaking from the central balcony of St. Peter's Square, Francis said, "May there be peace for war-torn Ukraine, so sorely tried by the violence and destruction of this cruel and senseless war into which it was dragged." In London, the Archbishop of Canterbury exhorted Russia to withdraw from Ukraine. I'm Julie Walker.
The battered port city of Mariupol appears on the brink of falling to Russian forces after 7 weeks under siege. Capturing the city would give Moscow a crucial success in Ukraine, following a botched attempt to storm the capital and the loss of the Russian Navy's Black Sea flagship. The Russian military estimated that about 2,500 Ukrainian fighters holding out at a hulking steel plant provided the last pocket of resistance in Mariupol. A Russian Defense Ministry spokesperson said those who refuse to surrender by a Sunday deadline, quote, will be destroyed. Seizing Mariupol would free up Russian forces for an offensive in eastern Ukraine, where Russia has focused after the failure to take Kiev. Thousands are believed to have been killed in Kiev, or rather in Mariupol, under the occupation of the Russian troops. This is VOA News. There have been more clashes between Israeli police and Palestinians around the Al-Aqsa Mosque in Jerusalem, AP correspondent Ben Thomas reports.
The unrest erupted after Israeli police entered the hilltop compound to secure the spot for Jewish visitors. Jews know the site as the Temple Mount, their holiest. But the Al-Aqsa Mosque also ranks as the third holiest site in Islam and has often been a flashpoint for violence. Police accused Palestinians of stockpiling stones in anticipation of more clashes. Palestinian medical officials say 17 Palestinians were wounded just 2 days after similar confrontations at the site. This year, the Muslim holy month of Ramadan and the week-long Jewish Passover are occurring at the same time, bringing thousands of visitors to Jerusalem. I'm Ben Thomas.
The death toll from floods that have battered South Africa's east coast has risen to 443. Including a rescuer, a regional official said on Sunday, as dozens more are still missing. Rains were starting to let up in the flood-ravaged east, allowing for search and relief aid operations to continue after one of the deadliest storms in living memory. He said the, quote, inclement weather has slowed our assessment and rescue operation on the ground, but we are once again back in the full swing. Floodwaters engulfed parts of the southeastern coastal city of Durban and surrounding areas early last week, ripping apart roads, destroying hospitals, and sweeping away homes and those trapped inside. Government churches and charities are marshaling relief aid for the more than 40,000 people left homeless by the raging floodwaters. North Korea says it has successfully test-launched a newly developed tactical guided weapon. The official Korean Central News Agency said Sunday that leader Kim Jong-un observed the launch, which it said would bolster the effective operation of the country's tactical nuclear forces. South Korea's military said it detected two projectile launches from the northeastern coast on Saturday. The launch, the latest in a spate of testing activity by North Korea, that outside experts say is meant to expand the country's nuclear arsenal and increase pressure on its rivals amid stalled diplomacy. Recapping our top story, Pope Francis made an Easter plea for peace in Ukraine and in other wars around the world as the battered port city of Mariupol appears to be on the brink of falling to Russian forces after 7 weeks under siege. Capturing the city would give Moscow a crucial success in Ukraine following a botched attempt to storm the capital and the loss of the Russians' Navy's Black Sea flagship. Reporting by remote, I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
morning and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington, D.C.
That the law gives us this power to follow whoever is reported to be suspected of engaging in criminal activities that are connected to corruption, or those that are in possession of property that is reasonably believed to be proceeds of crime.
Zambia's Anti-Corruption Commission steps up the fight against graft.
We believe that the president, you know, has an opportunity here to demonstrate his ability that he can uphold the rule of law, at the same time that he can listen to, you know, the citizen's voice.
Malawi civil society groups call on President Lazarus Chakwera not to sign a recent NGO measure into law.
The man is very peaceful and he loves his country. It is known that not everybody would like you. That is but nature. We understand that. So critics would say whatever they wish, but they cannot bring any proof against the man. He is innocent and people have high regards for him.
And the Gambian President Adama Barrow appoints a new Speaker of Parliament. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. In Zambia, the Anti-Corruption Commission says it has stepped up efforts to fight graft in the Southern African country. The agency says it has the political will and backing of the administration to carry out its constitutional mandate to independently investigate acts of public corruption. But critics say the Anti-Graft Commission is being used to target opponents of the administration and former government officials. This after former Justice Minister and an interim leader of the main opposition Patriotic Front, Givin Lubinda, was investigated for corruption. Properties belonging to another former minister of Lusaka Province, Boman Lusambu, were seized by the anti-corruption organization over graft allegations. But the spokesperson for the Zambia Anti-Corruption Commission, Queen Kashimbo, tells me that there is no political influence in the fight against graft.
The fight against corruption in the Republic of Zambia currently has actually been heightened due to the fact that there's a lot of political will that the investigative wing are receiving and from the highest office, which is the presidency. So the president has talked so much about the fight against corruption and how he wants to be very methodical, as well as the institutions that are fighting corruption to do that. So there's that political will, meaning all the resources that the investigative wings that fight corruption in the country are being supported fully, and also the members of the public have actually increased their confidence in these institutions, and we are receiving a lot of reports on suspected cases of corruption which we are setting up for investigation currently.
People have questioned whether there is political interference to go after previous government officials. What is the Anti-Corruption Commission doing to try to prevent recurrence of this phenomenon that a lot of Zambians have expressed concern about previously?
I think as the Anti-Corruption Commission, what we are actually doing is to ensure that we use the mandate that we have in the law given to us to carry out our three functions, which is the prevention part, the public education to members of the public so that they get to know how to report corruption and what to report about, as well as prosecution and investigation. So we are basically basing our actions on the mandate that is given to us, and also putting into practice the very fact that our law says that the commission operation should not be directed by anyone. And so we have that independence, and we are putting that into practice.
Queen, recently the Anti-Corruption Commission invited the acting chairman of the main opposition in the Patriotic Front, and then one of their leading members, Lusambu, a former minister, over allegations of corruption. The party is saying that it appears that the Anti-Corruption Commission is being used by the government to go after perceived political enemies and opponents of the administration. What is your reaction to that?
The people that are being investigated will always cry foul, but as a commission, we just carry out our investigation as per our mandate, and we are in no way politically acting or using any political directives that are coming to us to pursue those that are in the former government. We are actually just following acts of suspected corruption that come to us, and that information that we get, whether someone is in opposition or in the ruling government, we use the information that we have to carry out our investigation, irrespective of where the person or the suspected corrupt activity is being undertaken, or whoever it is that is involved. So we do not really just follow those that are in the opposition or in the former ruling party, but we also are investigating all sorts of cases, both those that are in government and those that are outside the government, whether past or present. So it's basically the information that we receive.
What measures is the Anti-Corruption Commission putting in place to ensure that the public reposes confidence in your ability to independently and transparently carry out your duties as enshrined in the Constitution, to ensure that your work is not tarnished by perceptions of being politically pressured to go after perceived political enemies or opponents of an administration?
What we are trying to do is to explain what the law espouses to members of the public so that they understand that basically what we are doing is following that particular mandate. So we take every opportunity to explain to the laymen and women of the country so that they appreciate that the law gives us these powers to follow whoever is reported to be suspected of engaging in criminal activities that are connected to corruption, or those that are in possession of property that is reasonably believed to be proceeds of crime. So we basically explain to them using various media platforms, even our social media pages. We've used those to explain to the people what the mandate is for the commission, and just to show them the independence and outline those particular sections of the act that gives us those powers.
Queen Kashimbo is the spokesperson for the Zambian Anti-Corruption Commission. She spoke with me from the capital, Lusaka. In Malawi, civil society groups are calling on President Lazarus Chakwera not to sign a new measure on non-governmental organizations that Parliament recently passed. Leaders of the groups who met in the capital, Lilongwe, are also calling for a meeting with the President over their concerns. The groups include Youth and Society, Center for Human Rights Rehabilitation, Human Rights Defenders Coalition, Section 12, and CREA. They say the new measure will destroy their right to operate in Malawi. They contend that if the measure becomes law, it will undermine the work of civil society groups and prevent them from engaging Malawians on issues of governance in the Southern African country. But proponents say the new measure only seeks to regulate the registration and activities of NGOs to prevent abuse, and they contend it is similar to other laws around the world. Charles Kajolo-Weka is the executive director for Youth and Society. He tells me that the activist groups plan to soon meet legislators and other prominent Malawians to express their concerns about the new measure.
Basically, it is a bill aimed at gutting the operations of civil society. It undermines active citizenship, and basically it criminalizes active citizenship. Our call on the president is not to assent to this draconian bill until the glaring areas are addressed. And we are hoping that the president is going to grant us the audience. We believe that the president is going to, you know, side with the people, he's going to side with the civil society, and that he's going to protect the very same civic space that catapulted him into power, because it is through active citizenship that the current government was elected.
But Charles, some people are suggesting that civil society groups and NGOs have to be regulated so people cannot take advantage to cause chaos and disunity in the Malawian society. How do you respond to them?
You know, the question of accountability we have this law in place. For example, you have the NGOs that are accountable to the public through the NGO board, through which the civil society or NGOs submit their annual reports in terms of audit reports as well as program reports. What we see in this bill, basically, is not really an attempt to strengthen accountability of civil society. Basically, it undermines the very same purpose of the bill. For example, the bill prohibits civil society organizations from participating in the political governance issues in what it is calling politicking or electioneering. Yet the bill does not even define what electioneering or politicking means.
But Charles, some people are suggesting that why didn't civil society groups go to Parliament and ask them or petition them to review this bill instead of now waiting until it is passed before going on the offensive and calling on the president not to sign that bill into law?
Peter, you must understand that we were ambushed as civil society because ordinarily Parliament was not supposed to table this bill. As I speak today, there is a court order restraining Parliament from tabling the bill or debating it that we obtained in 2019. So this really, you know, came as an ambush and in total disbelief that despite a clear court order restraining Parliament from tabling or debating the NGO bill, this bill was, tabled and passed. And that's why we find that it is very, very important for the president, you know, not to assent to this bill, because by assenting to this bill, the president is joining the constitutional delinquents that he, you know, debated and passed this bill when there was, you know, a court order restraining them to do so. This matter is still pending before the Supreme Court, and the order of stay that was obtained in 2019 has not been vacated or valid. And this, in our view, is a blatant violation of the rule of law by the executive, which, in our view, is a dangerous precedent and de facto to impunity.
But Charles, if this is the case, and you say they have ambushed you to pass this, and that is contempt of court, why don't you seek redress in court?
It is one of the options on our tables, and will not be discussing in detail in public, but it is one of the cards on the tables that we are considering. But we believe that the president, you know, has an opportunity here to demonstrate his ability that he can uphold the rule of law at the same time that he can listen to, you know, the citizen's voice, and that we may not necessarily have only to rely on the courts when the president sees it that this bill was unprocedurally tabled and that it was in violation of the rule of law.
Charles Kojoloweka is the Executive Director for Youth and Society. He spoke with me from Nzuzu in northern Malawi. Leaders from the Southern African Development Community, or SADC, have approved the de-escalation of the bloc's mission in Mozambique from rapid capability to a multidimensional force with a robust mandate. The decision follows a virtual meeting of the leaders chaired by South African President Cyril Ramaphosa this week. The leaders noted what they say has been progress made by the SADC mission in Mozambique in the fight against terrorism in Cabo Delgado province. They also committed to boosting the mission with additional personnel and new capabilities. This, officials say, will help to combat terrorism, an act of violent extremism in the region. For analysis of the decision of the SADC regional leaders and its impact on terrorism in Mozambique, I reach Carlton Kadiadu. He is a lecturer and researcher on peace and conflict issues at Joaquim Chissano University in the Mozambican capital, Maputo.
It is an acknowledgement that the force which is in place at this point in time is not that much robust and needs to be improved in terms of capabilities. Moreover, I think that when the SADC asks to make the force multidimensional, it means that it is not just to be a force concentrated on the military dimension, I suspect that they want to include some other aspects on this force, which is, for instance, police and probably intelligence. I said probably intelligence, but I'm almost sure that they want to include police in this multidimensional force. I suspect also that they want to include the developmental dimension on this force.
As a Mozambican, what are you hearing on the ground about this change in tactics to help in the fight against terrorism in part of Mozambique?
Three things I'm hearing from the fellow Mozambicans regarding to this last decision from SADC. The first thing is that some people believe that it is an acknowledgement of failure that SADC is bringing in a soft way. It means that they don't want to acknowledge directly that they failed in terms of reaction to the insurgency in Mozambique, so that they want to correct some mistakes that they have done. The second thing is that people say that this decision from SADC is a way to counter the Rwandan success in here in Mozambique. They want just to make their own success so that they don't feel in the last position in terms of prestige of what has been done to counter the insurgency here in Mozambique. Because whatever is said here in Mozambique with regard to the success in fight against the insurgency, the success is always attributed to the Rwandan forces. Even though people say that this is a good decision that SADC is taking in order to make its footprint in this successful combat so that the SADC is not discredited in terms of actions to stabilize, to make the SADC region is a peaceful and security region.
So what do you think are the expectations of Mozambicans about this change in tactics? What do they want to see?
If you, answer this question in terms of politically correct speech, I would say that the narratives here, the rhetoric, in the speeches that we hear from the government officials, they want it to weaken to the deepest way the capabilities of the terrorists to do attacks and put instability in Mozambique. In the end, in the last second, they want to finish the group. That is what you hear from the narratives and discourses and rhetoric from the ruling elites or the ruling government officials here in Mozambique. Even in the military, they want to eliminate the terrorist branch or activities that are happening here in Mozambique. This is the last goal and ultimate goal and the main goal that they want to achieve. Yet, you also hear from government officials that the presence of military forces or capabilities from SADC is not to be here in Mozambique eternally. So the Mozambican capabilities must be strengthened so that Mozambique forces can take this problem on their hands and fight as much as they can to eliminate the terrorist groups and terrorist activities.
But Carlton, looking on the ground, do you think the objective of the government is achievable, particularly with some of this resistance that these rebels have shown so far?
The direct answer is no. It's not possible to eliminate whatever group of terrorism you know in a short term, has the political discourse says at this point. And you see on the ground that there's some kind of small activities, but meaningful activities that are happening there. So we don't know, to make it worsen, the real and deepest roots of these groups. We might be talking about terrorism here in Mozambique, but in the end, the roots and the masterminders of these groups, we don't know who are they and where they are.
Carlton Kadiado is a lecturer and researcher on peace and conflict issues at Joaquim Chissano University. He spoke with me from the Mozambican capital, Maputo. In the Gambia, the leader of the Opposition Alliance for Patriotic Reorientation and Construction, or APRC, is the new Speaker of Parliament. Fabakari Tabongjata was appointed by President Adama Barrow following recent parliamentary elections. The APRC formed an alliance with President Barrow in the run-up to his re-election bid last year. Barrow won a second term. For the latest development, I reached Duduja, the Executive Secretary and Deputy Secretary of the APRC.
We feel very much elated knowing who the Right Honorable Fabakari Tabongjata is. His record sticks out clearly amongst the five nominated members to Parliament by the President. He is the most qualified. He has served in Parliament for 20 years, 10 years of which he was the majority leader in Parliament and also head of government business. And politically, he is still the leader of the Alliance for Patriotic Reorientation and Construction, APRC.
Would you say that his appointment is due to your agreement with Mr. Barrow in the terms of the alliance you formed ahead of the presidential election that paved the way for him to be nominated by the president as the Speaker of the Gambian Parliament?
Well, I still doubt that. I believe even without the alliance, because the president wants to appoint people that would be loyal to him and who also has the capacity and the experience to serve in those positions. So I believe based on his past records in Parliament, that's what has qualified him for the president to appoint him as the Speaker.
Now, as a leading member of the APRC, what are your expectations of him as the Speaker of Parliament?
We have no doubt that he will deliver. He's a man of integrity and he's someone who has this country at heart. He's a real patriot and a nationalist. Even today during his speech, he has addressed them, saying that he will serve everybody with justice and equality, that the country's interest is what we all have to pedal.
But what do you say to those who are skeptical, saying that they expect Duduja, a leading member of the APRC, to heap praises on the new Speaker of Parliament because both of you come from the same party?
The record speaks for itself. We have several commissions since after the fall of APRC as a party. The Jane Commission came. Nobody had the Right Honorable Fabakari Tabongjata been mentioned or called for any connections that he might did or have witnessed, and the recommendations also never mentioned him. Here comes the TRRC, no mention of him, not as a witness or a perpetrator. So he has a very clean record as far as this country is concerned. And he has almost spent all his life in Parliament. 20 years is not 20 months.
What do you say to opponents of your party who are of the view that for the party to lose election not long ago, a former president, Yahya Jammeh, going into exile, and to nominate somebody from that party of his to the Speaker of the Parliament is an insult to those who were victims under the APRC led by former President Yahya Jammeh? How do you respond to them?
I think we need to be honest to ourselves. Gambia belongs to all of us. It's a country where we all live and we all have equal rights. No matter what has happened, people must not forget that Fabakari Tabongjata has every right to be nominated. He has not committed any crimes. Who has he violated? Being part of a government does not mean that you are part of the atrocities that were committed. That's why I said he has a very clean record in this country. Nobody can point fingers at him. So people need to open up. In as much as you might not like APRC, the president has every right to appoint him. Nobody can point fingers at Fabakari.
What do you think are the expectations of the Gambians of him?
Well, people who know him have high regards for him, even those that he does not share the same views and political party with. The man is well respected. Like I said, nobody cannot point out any wrongdoing that he has committed being in Parliament for 20 good years, even more than that. And he has led this party, APRC, to where it is today. At all times, he always advocates for peace, for us to be law-abiding. That's why during his tenure, when he started in 2017 up to date, you will not hear APRC creating chaos in this country, not through demonstration or otherwise. So the man is very peaceful and he loves his country. It is known that not everybody would like you. That is but nature. We understand that. So critics would say whatever they wish, but they cannot bring any proof against the man. He is innocent and people have high regards for him.
Dudu Jah is the Executive Secretary and Deputy Secretary of Gambia's Opposition Alliance for Patriotic Reorientation and Construction, or APRC. He spoke with me from the capital, Banjul. This is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs, and music from our African collection. But first, Sierra Leone is famous for religious tolerance. The West African nation's people largely follow Islam or Christianity. Followers of both coexist peacefully and share things in common. But what does it mean to observe Ramadan and Lent in Sierra Leone? Eric Kao finds out from Freetown.
It's Ramadan and Lent in Sierra Leone. The sound of the Azan is symbolic to Islam as it calls Muslims to prayer.
Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar.
On the other hand, the seven drums are mainly used here by Christians for praise and worship. According to a 2020 estimate by the Pew Research Center, 78.5% of Sierra Leone's population are Muslims, 20.4% Christians, and 1.1% follow a traditional African religion or other beliefs. Though many differences in worship, yet Sierra Leoneans have much common ground when it comes to religion. Reverend Dr. Usman Jessifona is the General Secretary of the Interreligious Council of Sierra Leone, a body established in 1997 to promote peace, national cohesion, and religious dialogue in Sierra Leone.
We have accepted each other, look less on the issues that divide us, and concentrate on the issues that brings us together for the sake of promoting issues of national importance. The lesson that I think we could learn out of religious tolerance in this country is the issue of promoting coexistence, the acceptance of intermarriages, and also the issue of accepting each other irrespective of who you are.
Sierra Leone's 1991 constitution provides for freedom of religion, creating a safe space for citizens to hold on to their different beliefs. Alhaji Oshoba Ibrahim Abedin is a cleric at the Kabatula Mosque, one of the oldest in Sierra Leone. He says religion represents peace. Hence, any individual or group perpetrating violence in the name of religion contradicts the teachings of the holy books.
When you attend any gathering, you will notice that they will call upon the Muslims to offer a prayer and the Christians to offer a prayer. Likewise, in marriage, we do that. So that shows the tolerance of Muslim and Christian in Sierra Leone. We are working parallelly in any activity, intermarriage, businesses. You can see the Muslim and Christian there at all times without no confrontation, neither no argument. We go there, we enjoy ourselves peacefully.
Intermarriages make the Ramadan and Lent seasons more engaging with support for one another, especially this year when the holy seasons overlap. The 40 days of Lent ends with Easter, whilst Ramadan ends with Eid al-Fitr. Sabtu Shilon lives with her Muslim and Christian family.
Let me say you support in balance. No, Muslim keep fast, Christian keep fast. So they all share the eating together.
So we all support each other, as both Muslims and Christians are fasting at the moment. So they all share food together. For me, I have both Muslims and Christians who are currently fasting in my house. So we all cook and eat together. When it's time to pray, those who are Christians go to church, and the Muslims, too, go to the mosque. When there's a Muslim celebration, some Christians do join Muslims in the prayers, and some Muslims also do the same.
Sierra Leoneans are largely divided along political lines, but when it comes to religion, they work together in building on the record of being one of the world's most religious tolerant nations in the world. Eric Kawa, reporting for VOA in Freetown, Sierra Leone.
Botswana will soon transfer 1,000 elephants to Mozambique to help its eastern neighbor, ravaged by years of civil war, to repopulate its herd. The move will also help Botswana reduce its elephant population, the world's largest. From Habaroni, Botswana, reporter Nkodise Duve has the details.
President Mokgweetsi Masisi says Botswana will offer 1,000 elephants to Mozambique. Speaking at a recent state banquet in honor of his visiting Mozambique counterpart Filipe Nyusi, Masisi said the number is increased from an initial offer of 500 animals.
I wish to reiterate with honor the nation, Your Excellency, once again, of what used to be 500 elephants to Mozambique. The number has since increased. Given the high fertility rates. We look forward to their subsequent relocation to Mozambique in the near future, and we are very keen to see them finally roaming in their new habitats.
Botswana has been facing growing human conflict with its elephant herd, estimated to be 130,000 animals. Mozambique has only 11,000. Conservationist Neil Fitt says relocating the animals will benefit both countries.
Taking some animals out from the herd in Botswana will not have a detrimental effect, and 1,000 animals will not have a detrimental effect. However, that's just talking on numbers. It depends on how it's actually done. Family groups, small, large, everything else, and where. We must also be aware, which I'm sure His Excellency is, that a lot of the animals, in inverted commas, aren't actually Botswana's. They're regional. They traverse in between the different countries.
Mozambique has faced years of devastating civil wars, and there are concerns over the safety of the elephants. But Fitt says there are vast areas in Mozambique considered safe havens for animals.
Yeah, Mozambique has been through some very bad times in the last couple of decades. And the north is still tremendously bad. But the southern end towards South Africa and the bottom end of Zimbabwe area is very, very settled. And there's been a lot of very good translocations of different species back in to populate those areas again.
Mozambique's National Conservation Areas Administration says the country's elephant population has remained stable since 2014 despite threats to wildlife due to conflicts. Mozambique is presently battling Islamic insurgents in the Cabo Delgado region, where the Southern African Development Community, or SADC, has deployed troops. For VOA, this is Mkondisi Dube in Habaroni, Botswana.
Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospects in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. After a tumultuous year delay in the electoral process, the stage was reached whereby 290 parliamentarians were sworn in a secure environment at the Mogadishu airport last Thursday. Next will be additional 3 parliamentarians and perhaps within a few weeks to elect the president of Somalia. While it is clearly understandable that people are happy with this stage, it must also be recognized that it is not a satisfactory situation. When the stage started for the political and democratic development of Somalia after the overthrow of Said Barre in 1991, it was considered prudent that it must be a step by step because of the chaos that had descended on Somalia after the overthrow of Said Barre. At that time, they started with the clan system, because that has been what has been recognized in the attempt to revive the state of Somalia, that representatives of the whole country, instead of warlords, will be for clans to elect representatives, and then these representatives in turn will elect a government by indirect means. So well, so good. But because of the stability that emerged after this system has been achieved, there were those who saw Somalia as having been completely revived, despite the frequent threats by Al-Shabaab, which was earlier affiliated with Al-Qaeda, with bombings, business revived, and there was a misjudgment, perhaps, that all is well with Somalia. Even outside powers continue to see Somalia as a strategic state in terms of its location in the Horn of Africa and the Indian Ocean. We should not forget that it was because of this strategic location that the superpowers in the Cold War tried to incorporate the state. And at one time or the other, both the United States and the then Soviet Union have military bases in Somalia. But this is not the way Somalia could deal with Al-Shabaab and the terrorist threats that still remains. Whether the government functions or not, the people are not committed to the institutions and their representatives because they have no direct involvement in the election. But previous attempts to move to a democratic state of free and fair election have failed because politicians find it comfortable to use the clan system and indirect rule. So as we move along, if and when the new president is selected by parliamentarians, the first duty of that president and the legislature should be a full legal commitment that at the end of the time of the rule, the next parliament and the next election of the president of Somalia will be by the people of Somalia. And to do this, the parliament and the president must prepare the way for the Somali people to be able to exercise the right to vote. Civic education must be taught throughout the nations and even in schools to prepare them to elect their representatives. Undoubtedly, there will be some resistance among politicians. But those who support Somalia internationally must insist that they follow this path. Already, we are going to have a change in the security situation in Somalia with the reshaping of the international nation peacekeeping. Somalia has good prospects, but this can only be fully enjoyed if all the people are made to feel that the government is their government, not that of a clan or clans. I thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs. And it's Sunday on Nightline Africa. This is the time we get to relax and reflect. A flashback with music from the continent.
The best thing in the world. Never cherish for anybody else singing. Says she really grew up boy like me. Don't believe in nothing but the Almighty. Just a little jeans and a pure whitey. She never dreamed to ever be nobody wifey. Yeah. She said, I'm in a pretty but your heart is a man. Play you like a villain cause she caught in a way. Tonight I am walking away. Line to my mind and I grind. Yeah, yeah. Tonight I might fall in love, depending on how you owe me. I'm glad that I'm calming down, can't let no one come control me. Keep dancing and call it love, she fights it by falling slowly. If ever you are in doubt, remember what mama told me. Brown skin girl, your skin just like pearls.
for anybody else. The brown skin girl, that skin just like pearls, the best thing in the world. I never judge you for anybody else. The boys like a trophy when Naomi's walking. She need an Oscar for that pretty dark skin. Pretty like Lupita when the camera's closing. Trip up 11 when my Kelly's rolling. I think tonight she might break her brain. Melanin too dark to throw her shade. She minds her business and winds her ways. More like 24K. Okay. Tonight I might fall in love. Depending on how you hold me. I'm glad that I'm calming down. Can't let no one come control me. Keep dancing and call it love. She fighting but falling slowly. If ever you are in doubt, remember what mama told me. Brown skin girl, your skin just like pearls. Your back against the world. I never trade you for anybody else. The brown skin girl, your skin just like pearls. The best thing about the world. I never trade you for anybody else. Trade eyes with me. There's some complexities in complexion, but your skin is glow like diamond. Hit me like the earth, you be giving birth to everything alive, baby, know your worth. I love everything about you, from your nappy curl to every single curve, your body natural. Skin that was broken, me the same skin taking over. Things out of focus, you, but when you're in the room, they know.
Are the words of my mother. As I'm getting old, even now I remember. So I'm packing all my tools. I'm going back home. A young girl like me shouldn't be caught with an old school fool. She told me he was a banker, not knowing bank robber. This man is a gangster, bukum bankum boxer. I'm sorry I'm no pa, but I'm bubba down boy. A jewelry, so can they gun down for? Now it everything, every night and day. Mommy said, you the one me, but I didn't wanna know. Mommy said, mommy show, mommy said, mommy show. Picking up the here, mama. Picking up the here, papa. And then quada yaba. Social media nigga. Better than I have all, papa. Better than I know, the fan. Then to a quada, I would be a woman, cotton, I would see a boy. He told me he was a banker. No, no, we bank robber. This man is a gangster. Bukum bankum boxer. I'm sorry, I'm a bad. But I'm a bad boy. A jewelry, stuck on the guns and pour. Now it everything, every night and day. Mommy said, you the one me, but I didn't wanna know. Mommy said, mommy show, mommy said, mommy show, mommy said, mommy show. One day you will know, these are the words of my mother. as I'm getting old. Even now I remember, so I'm packing on my tools. I'm going back home. A young girl like me shouldn't be caught with a no school fool. He told me he was a banker, not knowing bank robber. This man is a gangster, bukum bangum boxer. Now he lives with me every night and day. Mama Chef, he's the one me, but I didn't wanna know. Mama Chef, Mama Show, Mama Chef, Mama Show, Mama Chef, Mama Show.
Our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoy the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we're on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, including producer Saida Hamdoun, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, if you are ugly, learn how to dance. And your host, Peter Clote in Washington. Good evening, Africa.